Hello, I'm Mark Peterson. Welcome to the Stronger Philanthropy Podcast. This is episode 16. This is where we love giving well. I've been following Indiana University for many years, as they are one of the few educational institutions I'm aware of that does academic research on philanthropy. Indeed, they have a school of philanthropy endowed by the Lilly family. What I didn't know was that within this school, they also had an institute that focused on the specific contribution and the role of faith in philanthropy. Several months ago, a friend of mine forwarded me the electronic newsletter for the Lake Institute on Faith and Giving. And as one of the items, they had profiled this podcast. I was surprised and pleased and decided I needed to reach out to today's guest. David King is the Karen Lake Buttrey Director of the Lake Institute on Faith and Giving, as well as Assistant Professor of Philanthropic Studies within the Indiana University Lilly Family School of Philanthropy. He earned his PhD from Emory University with a specific interest in American religious history and how it intersects with the growing field of world Christianity. His recent research focuses on the rise of evangelical relief and development NGOs, religious humanitarianism, and how religion engages with international affairs. He facilitates conversations with faith leaders, donors, and fundraisers around the intersections of faith and giving. So in today's interview, you're going to hear about the Lake Institute and what it offers. We will discuss how religious giving is often not taken seriously, and you'll be surprised at the actual size of religiously motivated philanthropy in the United States. Finally, you will discover what shifts are occurring in religious philanthropy. But now, let's turn to David and welcome him here to this podcast. David King, welcome to the Stronger Philanthropy Podcast today.
Thanks, Mark. It's great to be here.
For a couple of years now, you've been the director of the Lake Institute on Faith and Giving. I'd like it if you could just explain a little more of the Lake Institute and the unique platform and services you offer.
Sure. Well, Lake Institute is a part of the Lilly Family School of Philanthropy at Indiana University. And we have the great privilege of being sort of the only school of philanthropy in the world that offers degrees from a bachelor, undergraduate, master's, and PhD. So the Lake Institute is housed within the School of Philanthropy, and my role as the Karen Lake Buttrey Director of the Lake Institute is to administrate the work that we do at Lake, but it's also to teach within our School of Philanthropy. And it's a great pleasure to work with particularly our master's students and doctoral students who are not only shaping the field as it stands of philanthropic studies, but oftentimes are wanting to become leading practitioners, working with foundations, working with nonprofits, and many of them finding a place within the faith-based nonprofit world to take these questions. Some of them are, in effect, donors themselves who have their own family foundations that are trying to develop greater expertise in their own work as grant makers. But particularly our work at Lake, which is exciting to me, even based in a large state university, is to foster greater understanding of the way that faith inspires and informs giving. Mm. And so we work across faith traditions, particularly in three main areas, one of those being research and scholarship. So in the United States, at least, Giving USA, which is produced by the School of Philanthropy in partnership with the Giving USA Foundation, is sort of the overarching landscape on a yearly basis of what trends are happening within giving. We help resource the religious giving section of that report. We're really looking forward to doing what we think will be the first nationally representative congregational study over the next year or two on finances and trends in giving. We work with faith-based fundraisers, particularly researching sort of trends and what it means to be a fundraiser. How do we think about vocations? And sometimes it simply means bringing scholars together. The first time I found Lake Institute was as a doctoral student, where Lake Institute supports dissertations that find their way into this field of faith and giving.
And they ended up sponsoring your research, is that right?
That's right. So in my doctoral work, I really was looking at the history of World Vision as an evangelical NGO and how they evolved as they grew to sort of a leading global NGO in relief and development while maintaining, even if evolving, their own Christian identity. So Lake Institute really supported that work. And we oftentimes bring together young scholars really to have conversations about this field, or at least this conversation around faith and giving. So we're trying to build some scholarship and a conversation.
It's interesting that religious giving comprises a third of all giving in the United States, and yet it's so much under our radar. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think there's a couple reasons, and that's a great point. I mean, it's always been at least a third, and from some of our research, it was well over half just two or three decades ago. I think it's in one sense taken for granted that religious giving has always been a significant part, particularly in the United States. It's really hard to track because as religious giving is defined, at least by many, it's simply giving to congregations, missionary societies, denominations, and religious media like television or religious radio. And so many congregations, particularly denominations, are not filing 990 forms. They're not registered as 501c3s. And so it's actually really hard to track. For that reason, it sort of gets underreported and I would imagine underappreciated. One thing we're really missing there, I think, is all the types of faith-based giving that goes to non-congregational or non-denominational sources.
Such as World Vision, for example.
Right. World Vision, well over $1 billion, basically, in World Vision United States, is not counted as religious giving by Giving USA. So a lot of the social service agencies, human services, think about higher education and all the giving that goes to religious colleges, seminaries, divinity schools. Even a massive group like the Salvation Army is not counted as religious giving in the way it's normally counted. When we did a survey, when we asked individuals specifically what to name the religious identity of the organizations to which they gave, in that study, we saw that 73% of all giving went to what we called congregations, parishes, or religiously identified organizations. So there's an additional third or more so that went to the World Visions, the Compassions, the Samaritan Purses of the world.
So it's interesting if you kind of delve into the motivation of the heart by people in giving. It could be said that over a majority of the giving in the U.S. is from a faith motivation.
Yeah, and when we ask that specific question, you know, well over half of all giving goes, as people would say, comes out of their faith motivations. And almost three quarters of that giving goes to religiously identified organizations or congregations. Now, there are plenty of people who would not say they're giving to a religious social service agency is out of their faith motivations. They might simply want to end homelessness or provide services to those who in need in our urban core. But that's the big question, is how do we define religious giving? Is it giving to specific religious groups, as often researchers are going to define it? Or is it giving motivated by religious or spiritual values, which really opens up the question in much broader ways.
Another reason it might be a little bit hard to discern might be because of the differences between people's understanding of charity and philanthropy. And I know that you highlighted that in a recent newsletter of yours. Do you want to just flesh that out a bit for us, the attitudes that we have about charity and then attitudes about philanthropy and how they differ?
Yeah, I'm glad to, and I'm really intrigued that this conversation is becoming one that a number of foundations and donors and organizations are beginning to have, particularly out of our religious roots, because we know charity has such a deep heritage within our tradition, within our scriptural framework. Oftentimes, it's in some ways has kind of found a comeback. Even Pope Francis really has turned towards that language in contrast to philanthropy. And what we see here, particularly is in the school of philanthropy, where sometimes philanthropy can become a professionalized career choice. We offer a professional degree in philanthropic studies for people to work in the sector. But we do it from a very humanistic set of questions. We're really asking more about the why than the how to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less human resources and more, what are the ethics? What are the values that undergird this kind of conversation? So I do think particularly there is a there's a trend towards the professionalization, some might even say secularization of philanthropy, particularly as it kind of moved through the 20th century and you have more of a scientific philanthropy where you're actually trying to, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, and others really, same time you have professions like social work coming into being, really sought to simply not give handouts, but to solve problems. I think that, you know, many of our religious organizations have made the right move in following people like Bob Lupton's recent work around toxic charity or When Helping Hurts and some of those great resources for congregations and small nonprofits to really understand development, asset-based community development, for instance. But I think there's been a corrective, and I would say a wise one, to not to miss the value, the true value of charity. It's roots in love and giving that's in many ways open-handed and free and does not necessarily need to be evaluated.
Right. Looking at religious giving over the past 50 years, we've seen some shifts and changes, and you're alluding to some of those right now. Where do you see us heading into the future? Do you see us continuing to professionalize, or is this corrective going to take hold and maybe correct some of the ways that we've been professionalizing?
Well, in some ways, I think, you know, I guess I don't know, but if I had a hunch, what I think we're seeing is the blurring of the sectors where I think we'll move away from continually increased professionalization, if that's sort of defined as we have business, we have government, we have the nonprofit sector. And we'll see the blurring of those lines, particularly of a millennial generation. They're less interested in thinking about philanthropy or giving or charity simply for tax deductions. They don't even think in that frame. So for them, making a marketing decision, a purchase decision to buy a product that's red, to buy a product that's environmentally resourced and sustainable, that purchase decision, in some sense, in their mind, it is completely merged into their understanding of themselves as generous, as paying more for that product or making a small donation when they make that purchase.
And even an expression of their faith.
Exactly. And so I think the ways that we even ask the questions about belonging or believing, whether that's on surveys about their religious affiliation or the rise of the nuns or how they think about their giving, their volunteering, for instance, I think we'll continue to see declines in volunteering if we simply measure it in terms of spending particular hours at brick and mortar organizations. But when we see the merging of these sectors and their understanding of what giving means or how they actually engage in it, I think is one key area. A second, I believe, really is we're going to see that particularly around social entrepreneurship. And I think this is also true within the foundation world, that there's going to be a lot more venture philanthropy in ways that we think about how to invest. I think that seems to definitely be true among my students. They don't see the blurring the lines between business and nonprofit in the same way. And I think it will potentially be more and more atomized, where the large nonprofits that in many ways have shaped sectors or shaped the trajectory of philanthropy, giving, and charity might find that there'll be more and more actors. And it doesn't take much to be a grassroots NGO, a small foundation, to really shape new ideas. So that can be intimidating. That could be anxiety producing for many of us within established institutions and traditions. But I think it's really ripe for excitement. The last thing I'll mention, Mark, is just the fact that I think, and you alluded to it, that faith will continue to be a part of the way people engage in this around the world. We may not measure it the same way. We may not note how it's increasing attendance patterns in our religious congregations. But faith is not going away. I don't see a threat of that type of secularization, at least here in America, and it's certainly not on a global scale. I think the exciting thing is for people like the work that we do at Lake Institute is to try to track how faith motivates this work in all its ways.
I'd like you to put your theologian hat on just for a moment here. And I know you have a Master of Divinity, and so I'm appealing to that right now. but one of the things I've noticed is evolutions in our theological understanding of faith and of Scripture has impacted and pushed the boundaries on our philanthropy. I'm wondering if you can reflect on that a bit, how changes in theology change how we give as people of faith.
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's a lot of fun because I don't always get to put my theologian hat on every day. One thing that we do that we're really proud of, it's a lot of our work is in education and training. And we spend most of our time outside the university working in seminaries, working with denominational partners or congregations. And we have a program we call the Executive Certificate in Religious Fundraising, a four-day course that we do in partnerships with seminaries. And one full day of that course on religious fundraising is tied to a theology of giving, a theology of money. And we find that extremely valuable and important. But there are a couple of things I might say. One is, I think there is, this is more a hermeneutic, the way we read Scripture. But I think some of the language that we have oftentimes gone back to as historical or traditional, like the tithe, have less and less meaning for many religious Americans. Our religious participants, oftentimes we ask that question when we poll, and many religious Americans at least think of a tithe as any gift they make. It has no connection in their mind to a tenth, the original root of the word. So our biblical illiteracy might have something to do with it, and our the way we read Scripture and its meaning may theologically frame the sense of obligation or expectations around people's giving and how they give to the church or to other institutions. But I think particularly on a broader scale, I really think the shifts in missiology, understanding of God's engagement with us working in the world, I think is key. And I think as we've sort of embraced this already but not yet eschatological understanding of God's work in the world, I think it for many who fall into that space, there's an obligation, but there's an invitation to join in God's work in the world that requires us to be a part of it. It not simply requires us to work towards the sort of the inbreaking of God's kingdom, but also an invitation and a joy that can come from that participation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think particularly this shift in the way we think about eschatology and even sort of the end and how it works with God's kingdom. And I think the last point again on that front is a clear breaking down of what I have oftentimes found in my own research, particularly between evangelical and mainline, right and left, if we want to use those kind of terms, between an evangelism-focused individual conversion and more of a social action, social good.
Mm-hmm.
That dichotomy that often was works versus sort of individual salvation, mm-hmm. I think doesn't hold anymore. I think it's a much more of a holistic understanding that impacts the way that people give, volunteer, and engage in their work for the world.
Yes, I see that as well. There's organizations out there, Christian ones who would identify as Christian NGOs or Christian charities, such as the World Visions, who have a specific missional purpose that springs out of their faith orientation. And often I see the struggle with these organizations. They fear losing that identity as they grow and as they become proficient in what they do. Can you maybe discuss a little bit some of the struggles that these organizations have, and is it possible for them to retain their Christian identity?
Yeah, this is a great question. And I mean, this is really became where I spent 4 or 5 years writing the dissertation trying to get at some of these questions. I feel that you framed it exactly rightly, that it's not an easy slippery slope. As you professionalize, therefore you must secularize. But that's oftentimes the fear, is that as we grow, as we become more proficient in the way that we think about our work, as we engage with other foundations or federal grants, or moving in the space of other institutions at an international level like the World Bank or other types of organizations, that we will lose that religious identity. I think there's much more of less of an either or, and much more sort of just a spectrum of where people find themselves and their religious identity as an organization. There are a number of great studies and continued conversations about, you know, how your mission statement, how you hire personnel matters as far as how you retain that religious identity, and how you frame it as far as not only internally to staff and in organizational development, also second in the way that you communicate your mission to your donors, and third, how that impacts your actual practice of the work in the field. If those are distinct places. And I think you can have a religious identity that oftentimes can look, oftentimes for organizations look different in all three of those different sectors. And one challenge might be, how can you create or maintain a holistic religious identity so that your staff, your donors and supporters, and those with which you work understand who you are? And that's difficult. I think there's much more of a space today than there ever has been before, because it's coming from places like the World Bank and others who many times sort of occupy more of a secular neutral space, a secular, sometimes neutral, sometimes more what would be perceived as attacking people of faith. I think because religion is so much a factor in our global events that nobody can ignore it. Whether it's Islam or Christianity or anything to that effect, if you're working with people on the ground, mm-hmm. you have to attend to their own religious values and purposes. And I think we have a number of great organizations that have demonstrated that they can both be professional, proficient, but yet not leave their religious identity aside, and follow best practices of not falling into sort of best practices of development, for instance, sort of signing on to the fact that they will not proselytize while giving aid, for instance. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot more space to think critically about one's religious identity as an organization, despite all that we hear in the press as far as attacking these NGOs and what that might mean. It's a live question for many in the States. I think that there are great examples. Particularly, I think Canada has done a really good job of demonstrating how you can have a both and approach. And it looks differently in all sorts of parts of the West and the rest of the world, how these two religious and secular types of organizational structures look.
David, just in conclusion, since this podcast is focused on giving well, how would you encourage our listeners to give well?
I think this notion of how to give well may be one of the best questions that you could ask, and why I'm such a fan of the conversations that you've cultivated. This is a question that we ask all of those who engage with us to think through. And I think the first way to consider how to give well is to turn inward and to really consider one's own philanthropic autobiography and think about how generosity and giving has shaped who you are, your own family, and what legacies do you really want to leave? To take account of your giving and to think about where are your priorities, where is your passion and mission? And I think that that will also include sort of evaluating organizations and ministries and activities to which you give. But I would say the first place is to turn inward and to think about how your own passions match where your giving might go. And I think if you can then clearly frame why your faith is important to giving well, you can articulate that for your own family, but also to those other organizations in which you give and to those that come after you. And I think one of the best assets that we have as people of faith who feel who've been blessed with the opportunity to give is that this allows us to live a generous life. And that is really one of the great joys of the Christian life, and I would say across religious traditions, not only is an obligation, but it's an invitation. And modeling that is probably one of the best places for us to model a witness of what it means to live as a faithful follower.
Thank you, David King, for your thoughtful perspectives on faith and philanthropy. One item that was raised, and I'd like to highlight again, is the evolution that's occurring in religious philanthropy. As boomers age and millennials rise, these generational shifts impact our theologies. The way we think about God and about his call to us as followers is changing. This will impact our philanthropy, what we give to, how we volunteer, and our idea of religiously motivated giving will also necessarily change. Think about it and let me know what your thoughts are. You can find links to David King and the Lake Institute in our show notes below. Maybe one day you'll take a course there. I encourage you to check it out. This concludes today's podcast. You can subscribe at our website at strongerphilanthropy.ca, or you can find us on iTunes or your Android podcatcher apps. If you want to reach out, feel free to connect by email at strongerphilanthropy@gmail.com. Message me on Twitter at LoveGivingWell or on Facebook at Stronger Philanthropy. Buen camino.